Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we open our show with some news about a local judge facing misconduct charges. Then on Crime Beat, hear about a murder in Boulevard. There's some big money pouring into the La Mesa Council race, and we'll tell you who's getting it and who it's from. If you've got a smartphone, you'd better listen up before you try to board a plane, because certain Samsung models have been banned. On People Power, we'll tell you about efforts by lions, tigers, and bears in Alpine to rescue some big cats at a facility closing in another state. And then we'll have a heartwarming story about a community rallying to save three dogs bitten by a rattlesnake in Jamul. Early voting has begun, and we'll tell you where and how you can vote in San Diego County. Our newsmaker interview today is with Mark Jackson. He's with the No on B campaign. That's the initiative that would allow a developer to do an end run around the planning process and environmental review. And we'll tell you why it matters here in East County. Then on Destination East County, we'll tell you all about the most fun festivals and events coming up this weekend, from a toast of East County to some fabulous Halloween haunts. On sports, hear which Aztec has been named a mid-season All-American. And then on Sounds of History, we'll have one of our favorites, our interview with the curator of the Guy B. Woodward Museum in Ramona. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The State Commission on Judicial Performance has filed 11 counts of judicial misconduct against San Diego Superior Court Judge Gary Creep. The charges include ethical violations during his 2012 campaign, as well as misconduct while serving as a judge. Under California's Constitution, he could face removal from the bench, or censure, or public or private admonishment. The campaign violations include falsely claiming he was still president of the Family Values Coalition after the IRS revoked its nonprofit status and the organization was no longer in existence, according to the Secretary of State. Creep also claimed to be president of two conservative political action committees after he had resigned from those positions. He also faces action for actively participating in political activities while running as a judge, which is prohibited by the Code of Judicial Ethics. Creep raised funds to defeat Barack Obama in the president's reelection bid and spearheaded the birther efforts to investigate Obama's birth certificate. In addition, Judge Creep reportedly charged up 82% of his campaign expenses on a personal credit card instead of his campaign account, and that would be illegal. He is also accused of improper courtroom decorum. While discussing a prostitution case, he asked a woman charged with prostitution, "Is it you like the money or you just like the action?" He reportedly used crude language in some other proceedings. He also told the mother of a defendant whose case was dismissed to, quote, "slap him up the head a few times to make sure he stays off drugs," unquote. He used Spanish phrases such as "no cerveza, no tequila" in court and called attorneys and interns unflattering names such as Dimples and Shorty. In addition, Judge Creep is accused of failing to conduct a trial on the date that it was set, giving the appearance that he had prejudged the case. In another case, he rescheduled it without notifying one of the parties, then granted a motion for the other side with one party not present. Plus, he asked attorneys at the courthouse for their opinions on matters of law before him in other cases, according to the charges that he now faces. Judge Creep has 20 days from the date of service to file a written response to the charges. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a crime scene report. Sheriff's deputies responding to a call of a shooting Sunday night in Rural Boulevard found 55-year-old Craig Hodson with multiple bullet wounds to his torso lying on the ground in front of a garage on Old Highway 80. Deputies and paramedics provided medical aid, but the victim died of his injuries at the scene. The medical examiner's office determined that the death was a homicide. Paul David Carr had been arrested, said Lieutenant Kenneth Nelson with the sheriff's homicide detail. Anyone with information about this incident is asked to call the homicide detail at 858-974-2321 or after hours at 858-565-5200. You can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on substantial campaign contributions pouring into the La Mesa City Council race. Topping the list is challenger Colin Parent, who has raised over $63,000 so far. Incumbent Councilmember Christina Licio has raised $16,000, of which $15,000 is self-funded. Councilmember Ruth Sterling's campaign is 100% self-funded with $3,600. Asked about his hefty donations, Parent told us, "Unlike my opponents, I am not able to self-fund my campaign from family wealth. Fortunately, I have many longtime friends who believe in me and my vision for La Mesa, and I am grateful for their support. I am working hard to communicate with voters in La Mesa about the need for change at City Hall," he adds. Parent is an attorney who specialized in affordable housing while serving in Governor Jerry Brown's administration. He is currently counsel for Circulate San Diego, working on transit, walkable communities, and climate change issues. Parent's donors include prominent La Mesans, such as former Mayor Art Madrid and retired Planning Commission Chair Dexter Levy, as well as the La Mesa Foothills Democratic Club. But the vast majority of his donors are from outside La Mesa, with about $9,200 from outside San Diego County. That includes contributions from politicians, fellow attorneys, green energy companies, and building industry interests. It's shaping up to be one of the most expensive council campaigns in La Mesa's history. In 2014, Bill Baber spent about $47,000 on his successful council race, less than what Parent has raised to date. Donations to the current council candidates do not include any independent expenditure campaign funding, such as political action committees or PACs, or political parties themselves that may have spent money on mailers, ads, or signs. But in La Mesa, big expenditures don't necessarily guarantee success. In 2010, Realtor Laura Lothian spent over $11,000 on her mayoral bid, with another $37,000 spent on her candidacy by an independent expenditure campaign funded by real estate interests. Despite more than $48,000 expended overall, Lothian finished last out of a field of five candidates, drawing just 10% of the vote in that race. In a town measuring only 9 square miles, wearing out shoe leather walking door to door and appearing at candidate forums is still often the most effective way to persuade voters.
This is Rebecca Williamson with an important safety message for travelers. Effective immediately, the federal government has banned all Samsung Galaxy Note 7 smartphones on flights in the United States due to the risk of explosions. The ban includes carry-on items, checked baggage, and air freight shipping. The order applies to all Samsung Galaxy Note 7 smartphones, even ones replaced after a recall, since some replacements have been found to be at risk of fires too. Anyone attempting to bring one of the phones on board a plane could face criminal prosecution, fines, and seizure of the phone. The order was issued jointly by the Federal Aviation Administration, the U.S. Department of Transportation, and the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. U.S. Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox says safety of people aboard planes must take priority over passengers' inconvenience. He states even one fire incident in flight poses a high risk of severe personal injury and puts many lives at risk. Samsung has announced it will halt manufacturing of the Note 7 Galaxy smartphones. Some airlines, including Delta, Alaska, and Virgin America, have added extra fire equipment in cargo holds and passenger cabins, including fire-resistant contained bags, due to the risks posed by exploding phones and other items with lithium batteries that have been linked to fires. Also, in the past week, reports have surfaced of numerous explosions, including Samsung washing machines, which thus far the company has refused to recall.
This is Janice Russell, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world. Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a big cat and exotic animal rescue center in Alpine, has sent its rescue team to a sanctuary in South Dakota that closed down after a tiger mauling and USDA inspection last week. The team will transport the animals to other sanctuaries, including lions, tigers, and bears, in their state-of-the-art animal transport hauler. The journey is expected to log over 8,000 miles over 3 weeks. In addition to maintaining a sanctuary for over 60 rescued animals here in Alpine, California, Lions, Tigers, and Bears has provided rescue, medical, and transport services to over 150 animals in the last 5 years alone. The organization is nonprofit and relies on donations from the public to fund its rescues. To learn more or help out, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Janice Russell.
East County residents pitched in to help a single mother in Hamul whose 3 dogs were bitten by a rattlesnake last week. Hillary Dixon heard her dogs barking and killed the large snake, but couldn't afford the high cost of anti-venom and other treatment needed to save her dogs' lives. So friends set up a GoFundMe page, raising over $7,000 in just 2 days. Nikki, her oldest dog, was in critical condition initially, but on Sunday was able to come home from the veterinary hospital. Another dog, Honey, was bitten on the nose and had a swollen face. The third dog, Sassy, was bitten near her eye and may lose her vision on one side. Dixon voiced gratitude to the community, including strangers who gave generously. "Without you, none of this would be possible," she wrote on the GoFundMe page, where a video of Nikki leaving the vet clinic is now posted. Dixon wants to warn others to be watchful of snakes, particularly as Halloween approaches and children will be out and about. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brett Hutchinson.
Voters who want to cast their ballots early for the November 8th presidential general election can now do so at the County Registrar of Voters office in Kearny Mesa. Early voting is underway and will continue from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. each Monday through Friday and until the polls close at 8 p.m. on Election Day. In addition, the office will be open on Saturday and Sunday, November 5th and 6th, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Approximately 1 million mail ballots were mailed out on Tuesday, October 11th. If you registered to vote by mail and have not received your ballot, you need to call the Registrar of Voters at 858-565-5800 right away. There's also still time for registered voters to request a mail-in ballot before November 1st. For the first time in San Diego County history, registered voters will receive a 2-card ballot. Contests will be listed on the front and the back of each page. The 2-card ballot, with all of those ballot initiatives, also weighs a little bit more, so it will take 67 cents in postage. That's 2 postage stamps to mail it back in. Considering the length of the ballot, voters who requested their ballot by mail are urged to please act early. Registrar Michael Vu requests, if you know how you want to vote, grab that mail ballot when you get it, vote, and send it back in right away. The sooner we get the ballot back, the sooner we can start processing it, so it will be counted right when the polls close at 8 p.m. on November 8th. Mail ballots are convenient for voters who would rather not make a trip to the polls on Election Day or a special trip to the Registrar of Voters' office to cast their ballots. The Registrar is still looking for poll workers, especially bilingual poll workers. For more information, you can call 858-565-5800 or visit sdvote.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we're going to be talking about the highly controversial Measure B, which is on the countywide ballot in November. Now, this is all about the Lilac Hills Master Planned Community in Valley Center, which the Planning Commission approved last year, but with some conditions that would cost the developer millions of dollars. So instead of going to the supervisors to appeal it, the developer decided to take its case directly to the people. They paid professional signature gatherers to try to get this measure on the ballot for the project that would include 90,000 square feet of retail space and 1,700 homes on 600 acres, which is about 16 times more residents than the county general plan would normally allow on a parcel of that size in a rural area. So today, my very special guest is Mark Jackson, and he is here with the No on Measure B campaign. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for the opportunity to discuss the project, Mary.
Okay, you're welcome. So let me ask the obvious question for starters. This developer could have just appealed this to the supervisors and taken his chances. Maybe they would have approved it. Why do you think they didn't?
Well, probably because they didn't have the necessary 3 votes to pass, would be my guess. Supervisor Horn, because he has property in the vicinity of the project, was forced to recuse or not vote on the project. He can't participate in the project, so only 4 can participate.
Which means they'd have to have 3 to get it through.
Correct.
So, as I understand it, the supervisors had a choice. They could have put it on the ballot. They could have just approved the project. Or they could fund a report to provide fact-finding about the project, and they chose the latter option. So what did the fact-finding report find?
That's right, Miriam. On the 19th of July, the supervisors met, and they ordered a quick turnaround report, a 45-day report. They found that many of the conditions that the Planning Commission put on the project for infrastructure to achieve the necessary safety that's required of urban level development at this for a school, for the funding of a fire station and the staff to provide 5-minute service, which is required for this density. And lastly, and probably the most expensive item, is for safe design and capacity roads to handle the 5,200 residents.
The supporters call this project a village community, and they say it's needed to provide affordable housing for our area as well as retail. The opponents call it leapfrog development, which means putting a big project in a rural area where there's not the infrastructure, the roads, the fire service, and so forth. This project would bring about 19,000 more cars a day than are currently out there, and leapfrog development is actually prohibited by the county general plan. Is that correct?
That's true. There is a guiding principle in the general plan that makes you place urban development where there is infrastructure. And the big issue that the impact report that the county also did, it explained to everyone that there's a high likelihood that the cost of infrastructure that's required for this community will be borne by county taxpayers.
Wow. So we could all be paying to improve these roads and build that fire station up there in Valley Center, even if we live out in East County here.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, interestingly, this would also enable the developer not only to bypass the County Planning Commission and the County Board of Supervisors, but to bypass certain requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. There has been a somewhat recent Supreme Court ruling that allows citizens' initiatives that go through this process and are approved by the majority of the voters to bypass the CEQA impact analysis and reporting requirements. So that is one of the attributes and one of the reasons why developers are going this route.
Now, I understand that the legislature is trying to close that loophole.
The fourth highest priority for this legislative session with the Democratic majority of the Senate and the Assembly is to close the loophole, not totally. You can still do this citizens initiative and get the voters to weigh in on a project for approval, but so it doesn't get allowed to bypass CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act reporting.
Okay, so they would still have to do that, but only after the legislature weighs in. But right now, it's kind of a free-for-all out there. They can just bypass the environmental review no matter what endangered species might be out there, or, you know. Tell us what the area is like out there right now. For those readers that have not been to Valley Center in the Lilac Hills area, what does it look like?
It's rolling hills, a lot like many areas in the East County. It's granite hills, a lot like Mount Helix.
Yeah.
And the average slope is probably 20%, 25%. What's out there now, the growing and active agricultural businesses, the largest and third largest grower of cactus and succulents in the United States, have over 200 acres of greenhouses, growing drought-tolerant plants.
So it's really an agricultural area, and I know when I've driven out there, I've seen, as the name implies, wild lilacs growing on those hills. It's a very pretty area. And it'll be bulldozed, is that right?
There needs to be moved more material than the Hoover Dam.
Wow.
4.1 million cubic yards of dirt in the site, leveling off the hilltops and filling the valleys, and that's a lot of dirt and rock to move over an extended period of time, over 10 years of time.
And that's basically to build a community with the population of Del Mar and put it up into this rural area in Valley Center. So, listeners, if you're wondering why are we taking so much time talking about a project in Valley Center that's on your ballot, when obviously we're addressing listeners in East County and parts of urban San Diego as well, why should listeners in East County or San Diego care about this initiative over a development project in Valley Center?
Well, do you want to pay for the infrastructure? Do you want to dig in your pockets and pay for the road impact? Mm-hmm. That the county has indicated that the cumulative impacts this will have on I-15 will cost over $1 billion in 2010 dollars to fix. It takes two lanes both ways to remove the gridlock that this project heavily contributes to.
If this project is approved, do you believe that will encourage other developers to try to bypass the normal planning process and maybe try to put other controversial items on the ballot, you know, next time somebody wants to build a controversial energy project or housing project in East County or, a gas-fired power plant or a sand mine? Do you think they might just decide to go this route and take it directly to voters and put through things that perhaps local communities and community planning groups in East County or other parts of the county are opposed to?
I think it's a serious financial temptation because the financial incentive is to go with a citizens initiative. CEQA, while I think the costs are overinflated by developers that are trying to put the wrong project in the wrong place, there are some costs associated with it. And if you can sidestep that by a direct approval by voters, I think that's very tempting. And I think people will follow that route.
Now, like much of East County, Valley Center is also a very high fire danger zone as well. What kind of planning has been done for this project to provide for fire safety and safe evacuation if there's a wildfire?
For these urban densities, the county requires a 5-minute fire and medical services response. The current area, which is rural, the district provides 10-minute response. That would require the addition of a station and additional services. This particular ballot measure took that out, and there's no additional fire station, and there's no provision to provide a 5-minute service. Actually, the measure says that they're going to provide 10-minute service, and they deem that that's adequate.
And 10 minutes, if you're having a heart attack, you're going to be dead, folks, probably. That's really not enough for emergency responses. This initiative is racking up some powerful interests on both sides, actually. Against it are some of the major environmental and citizen groups out here in East County, listeners. It includes the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, the Save Our Forests and Ranchlands Organization, both big environmental groups here in East County, the San Diego Sierra Club. The Democratic Party is against it. So is the League of Women Voters. Lots of other people opposed to this thing. On the plus side, we've got former Mayor Jerry Sanders, who's also headed up the Chamber of Commerce regionally, and the San Diego County Republican Party. Now, Mark, I understand you had an interesting story behind that Republican Party endorsement. Would you like to share it?
Yeah, we first heard about the endorsement when it was first announced. It was a hosted event with free cocktails and appetizers for elected officials. And a friend is an elected official, and he noticed that it was funded by the developer in Creative Investments.
What a coincidence.
a minor coincidence. And we determined it was announced for the first time that they had taken a yes on this measure, yes on B position, and we afterwards found out that there was a $50,000 donation to the Republican Party, the timing of which is a little suspect given the way that it was noticed. The Democratic Party, and this is not a partisan issue, Republican or Democratic.
Okay, and just for the record, I understand you're an independent voter, so you're not a member of either one of these political
That's
groups.
Correct, Mary.
Okay. The Union Tribune has also recommended voting no on B.
That's correct. On October 9th, they made a very strong no on B endorsement because they don't believe that it does what it promises. It promises to provide affordable housing, and they feel that when the infrastructure costs are fairly, if the developer paid for them themselves, it wouldn't achieve affordable housing. And I think there's very real prospect that the county taxpayers have to help subsidize the project.
Now, in all fairness, the Yes on B people are not here today. Essentially, their arguments boil down to the county does not have enough affordable housing, which probably is true, and that the area up there needs more shopping and so forth. What would your counter be to that? I mean, if you're opposed to this project, do you have other ideas that you would support to help with the affordable housing problem in the county, which has certainly, you know, been notable? It's a very expensive place to live.
Yeah, it's an absolute fact that there's a shortage of affordable housing or housing period in San Diego County. And it's not fair that the urban areas take all of the load. But the current general plan that's been approved by the county in Valley Center has Valley Center doubling from 6,500 homes to 13,000 homes.
Okay, so they're already slated to be doing their share, doubling the number of homes, many of which presumably would be in the affordable category up there?
They're heading towards the affordable category. We are working, I'm a two-term member of the Valley Center Planning Group, and we are working with developers. There are two areas within Valley Center on relatively flat land that it has access to a sewer and also has public roads.
So people aren't just traffic. It's not a NIMBY thing where people are just opposed to any development at all. It's more a matter of people up there want sensible development that's sustainable and not something that's out of scale for the community and could create traffic nightmares or fire hazards for folks.
That's true.
Okay. This project is also really not very transit friendly, it seems to me. What we're hearing is that there's a push by SANDAG to try to encourage development along transit corridors, primarily meaning trolley lines, train routes, and they don't have either of those up in the Valley Center area. Is there any mass transit up there?
Yeah, the only transit, there's a bus loop that goes and visits the casinos and takes an hour and 35 minutes to get back to Escondido Transit Center.
Wow.
So there's no transit.
So if you're a gambler with a lot of time on your hands, this might work out. But for anybody else, it doesn't seem to be very transit-friendly either. Where can people go if they want to learn more about Measure B?
The easiest place to go is the website, which is saveoursdcountryside.org. We also have a Facebook page. And if you wish to find out more information about the project, it's there.
Okay, very good. And, of course, the League of Women Voters also has information on their webpage, too, I would assume. And they are actually opposed to the project, but they generally provide information, I think, on both sides.
League of Women Voters has taken a rare position on this, which they very rarely do. And their project is called Voters Edge. The other sites that have impartial, balanced representation would be kpbs.org, which also is a partner with the League of Women Voters in providing, balanced voter information.
Correct. And you can also go to the San Diego Registrar's site, which is sdvote.org, and they have all of the ballot measures and all of the arguments for and against every measure that you can find there. So I'm going to give you the last word today. We've been speaking, listeners, with Mark Jackson, who's with the No on Measure B campaign, all about the developer effort to bypass the normal planning process and get the Lilac Hills Master Plan Community and Valley Center approved without going through the planner's CEQA environmental review or the Board of Supervisors. Mark, what would you like our listeners to know about that we've not already discussed?
Well, just sort of a summary. The project promises affordable housing, and it doesn't deliver. That's the major issue that I have with the project. If it fairly had to pay for the minimum safe infrastructure to place the project where it is, it wouldn't pencil out. There's no, and the county's impact report verifies this, there's no commitment to provide any housing at any price level.
Mark, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on the project, Miriam.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes Borrego Days, a toast to East County, a production of Annie Jr., Lakeside Heritage Day, Haunt Fest on Main, Haunted Trails, and more.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions including Trunk or Treat, Stoney's Boo Bash, the Boo Parade, Halla Scream, the La Mesa Historical Homes Tour, the Art and Wine Fest in Ramona, a Fall Plant Stravaganza, and the Trout Opener at Santee Lakes.
So stay tuned for all of these and many more.
Borrego Springs hosts Borrego Days this Friday through Sunday, October 21st through 23rd. The fun begins Friday with live entertainment, followed by a parade on Saturday starting at 10 a.m. with a vintage plane flyover and over 70 parade entries, from floats to equestrian groups to marching bands. After the parade, you can stroll on over to Christmas Circle for displays by 50 artists, as well as retail and food vendors, a beverage garden, and a car show. There will be live entertainment all day and into the night under the stars in this dark sky community. Then on Sunday, you can watch an off-road show. All weekend long, you can also let the kids have fun at a kids' carnival, complete with rock wall, inflatable slides, and carnival games. There is a fee for the carnival. For more information, you can visit BorregoSpringsChamber.com/BorregoDays.
The Visionary Dance Theater is presenting Annie Jr. October 20th through the 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Visionary Performance Space in La Mesa. Leapin' Lizards, the popular comic strip heroine, takes center stage in one of the world's best-loved musicals. With equal measures of pluck and positivity, little orphan Annie escapes an orphanage determined to find her parents in the 1930s New York City. In fun-filled adventures with a dog named Sandy, Annie foils the evil orphanage operator, befriends President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and meets up with the billionaire Oliver Warbucks. For tickets and details, visit visionarydancetheater.org.
A Toast to East County will be held on Saturday, October 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m. at Cottonwood Golf Club in Rancho San Diego. This event, hosted by the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce, will feature tastings from local wineries, breweries, and locally grown foods, all produced in East County. Also included in the program will be the Manus Vineyards Trailblazer Awards, recognizing outstanding visionaries in the vintner industry. For tickets and details, you can visit eastcountychamber.org.
Lakeside Historical Society will host its annual Heritage Day Luncheon and Reunion on Saturday, October 22nd. The meet and greet will begin at 11 a.m. and a catered luncheon will be served at noon at the Old Community Church in Lakeside. After the luncheon, there will be a speaker on Hatfield, the Rainmaker, from the San Diego History Center. A 102-year-old survivor of the flood will also be present for guests to meet. Reservations are required. For tickets, you can call the Lakeside History Center at 561-1886.
Van Omering Dairy in Lakeside invites you to visit Oma's Pumpkin Patch, open Tuesdays through Saturdays in October from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. The patch includes hay rides, a petting corral, play equipment, a cottonseed mountain for climbing and sliding down, a sand pile with toy trucks and tractors, pedal cart, and tricycle racetrack, kid-powered games, and a hay bale maze. You can also choose pumpkins from small to over 100 pounds. Check out a farm gift shop and the Cow Country Cafe. For details and directions, you can visit omaspumpkinpatch.com.
The 5th Annual Haunt Fest on Main will take place on Main Street in downtown El Cajon on October 21st from 5 to 10 p.m. Costume contests will be held on the Main Street stage. There will also be carnival rides, crafts, games, a car show, candy challenge, kids zone with outdoor movies, face painting, a pumpkin patch, inflatables, rock wall, and performances by local dance groups. In addition, the Halloween-themed event features live music on two stages, including Out of the Ashes with Linda Ray from 5 to 7:15 p.m. and the Amazing 80s All-Stars from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. For more information, you can check out hauntfest.org.
The woods will come to life with creatures along the Dos Picos Park Haunted Trail in Ramona on Saturday, October 22nd from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Join rangers and spirit guides in the day use by the restroom area for guided hikes lasting about 20 minutes and challenging terrain. It's recommended to wear warm clothes or costumes along with sturdy shoes. Bring a flashlight and, for kids, an adult. Rain will cancel this haunting event. For details, you can call Dos Picos County Park in Ramona at 760-789-2220.
You're invited to a dark and scary hike at Oak Oasis County Preserve in Lakeside on Saturday, October 22nd from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. A park staff spirit guide will lead you along the haunted trail, weather permitting. Wear comfortable shoes and dress in layers. For more information, call the park at 619-561-0580 or visit the Facebook event page. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The final Cajon Classic Cruise car show of the season is Trunk Retreat on Wednesday, October 26th from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. You can see classic vehicles decorated in a Halloween theme, many of them with candy for the children. This special event will involve a full street closure of East Main Street between Magnolia and Claydale Avenues. In addition, you'll find plenty of food, entertainment, and vendors. For details, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
On Halloween weekend, Sequan Golf Resort will host Stoney's Boo Bash on Thursday, October 27th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Proceeds will benefit needy children in East County through Stoney's Kids Legacy. A costume is optional, but you can enjoy a cocktail hour with hors d'oeuvres, live and silent auctions, a dinner, a no-host bar, and a costume contest. It promises to be a spectacular evening. For tickets and reservations, you can visit stoneykidslegacy.org.
Celebrating its 12th year, the Boulevard Boo Parade will be held on Saturday, October 29th, starting at 10 a.m., with over 70 entries of live entertainment marching on 1 mile of El Cajon Boulevard in the college area. The parade will entertain you with spooky ghouls, goblins, ghosts, and witches to fill you with the Halloween spirit. Special guests from the past 12 years include local and national celebrities and political personalities. Hosted by the College Area Business District, the Boulevard Boo Parade attracts thousands of spectators. You can best view the Boo Parade along the south side of El Cajon Boulevard between Rolanda Boulevard and 60th Street. For more information, you can visit College Area BID as in Business Improvement District.com.
The Julian Triangle Club presents its 60th annual melodrama, The Stalwart Surveyor, otherwise known as The Man Who Sank the Cuyamaca Float. The melodrama will be presented Friday and Saturday nights, as well as Sunday afternoons each weekend in October. This was the first melodrama that was written specifically for and about the town of Julian 49 years ago. For tickets and details, visit julianmelodrama.com.
Saps at Sea, a local Laurel and Hardy club, invites you to experience that wonderful time of the fear, the return of the Hollow Scream Sapstravaganza on October 29th at Williams Hall Trinity Church in Spring Valley. This event includes showings of the spooky cartoon Pink Plasma, in which the Pink Panther arrives at Dracula's castle for a good night's sleep. And then, in the film Habeas Corpus, Laurel and Hardy arrive at the home of a mad scientist who needs a body from the local cemetery for experiments. As a special added treat, Russ Peck will perform a live musical score with sound effects. There will also be a surprise guest comedian and a showing of the Laurel and Hardy murder case and more. You can come in costume to win a prize and enjoy treats. For more chilling details, you can visit sapsatsea.com.
Scotty's Scare Trail, one of East County's most haunting attractions, will be open at the abandoned Marshall Scotty's Amusement Park in El Cajon for a full month every Thursday through Sunday, now through October 30th between 7 and 11 p.m. The trail is rumored to be haunted by the ghosts of former park employees. This year, you can see the bumper car carnage, the slaughter trailer, and the haunted park offices. Visit the frightening Ferris wheel. Embrace yourself as you walk through the remains of the death coaster. Organizers promise that Marshall Scotty's Scare Trail is packed full of fine tingling, heart-pounding effects that are so real that they will keep you screaming for your life as you try to find your way out. For more information, you can visit scottyscaretrail.com.
The La Mesa Historic Home Tour takes place on Saturday, November 5th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The La Mesa Historical Society, in association with Modern San Diego and San Diego Home and Garden, invite you to a showcase of 7 hidden jewels nestled in the hillside of Mount Helix. A shuttle service will be provided. For tickets and details, you can visit lamesahistory.com.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego hosts its annual Fall Plant Stravaganza on Saturday, November 5th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The event aims to help you make the most of the fall planting season with a plentiful mix of gardening experts and plants offered by local growers and nurseries. Visitors can attend workshops on gardening-related topics led by experts, plus visit exhibits staffed by garden docents and guest exhibitors to learn about water-saving gardening, edible gardening, compost making, gardening for butterflies, and more. Local water agencies will share money-saving rebate opportunities for residents, replacing thirsty landscapes with those that save water and are beautiful too. Personalized attention can be found at the Ask the Designers area for an in-depth landscape design advice. Plus, the Gardener's Gift Shop will be overflowing with unique nature-inspired treasures. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
The 4th Annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival will be held on November 5th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. This year, the event is at Beegent Ranch in Ramona. Guests can savor vintages from local wineries, sample foods from local restaurants and caterers, shop for artwork from local artists, and bid on hand-painted wine barrels, all to benefit the Ramona Heart Mural Project. For tickets and details, you can visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net.
2,500 pounds of rainbow trout will be stocked for the trout opener at Santee Lakes on November 5th from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. There will be prizes for the largest fish as well as tag fish. For directions to the lake, visit santeelakes.org.
Honoring our veterans, El Cajon's annual Veterans Day ceremony will be held on November 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. at Centennial Plaza. The event includes music by students from Valhalla High School, as well as a color guard presentation by the Marines from Miramar.
The Veghorst Museum invites you to welcome the holidays at its annual holiday luncheon on Thursday, November 17th. This festive event is from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can enjoy a catered luncheon by Cupid's Catering, an opportunity drawing, and view paintings and sculptures by famous Western artist Olaf Veghorst. For tickets, you can visit veghorstmuseum.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Liz Albin with an Aztecs football report. San Diego State senior running back Danelle Pumphrey has been named a CBS midseason All-American, CBSSports.com announced Tuesday. Pumphrey is one of only four unanimous selections on the team, which was voted on by a panel of college football experts from CBSSports.com and 247Sports.com. Through six games, Pumphrey has rushed for 1,111 yards and 11 touchdowns on 167 carries, while also leading the team with 18 catches for 131 yards. Pumphrey leads the nation in rushing yards per game, and all-purpose yards per game, and is tied for second in rushing touchdowns, fourth in rushing yards per carry, and tied for fourth in overall touchdowns. Pumphrey's 1,111 rushing yards are 169 more than the next player in one less game, while it's 185.2 yards per game on more than 72 other FBS teams and would rank 57th in the country as a team. He has three games this year with at least 220 yards, while no other player has more than one 220-yard game. Pumphrey enters Friday's game with San Jose State, ranked 8th all-time in NCAA FBS history in rushing yards, tied for 12th in overall touchdowns, and tied for 13th in rushing score. Pumphrey has broken four of Marshall Faulk's SDSU career records this year, including rushing yards, 100-yard rushing games, all-purpose yards, and attempts, and tied another three 1,000-yard seasons. Off to its best start since 1977, San Diego State welcomes San Jose State to Qualcomm Stadium for a 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time Friday game.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, guest hosting the Sounds of History, recording on the road today in Ramona.
We are at the Guy B. Woodward Museum in Ramona, which is a marvelous place, and it is my great pleasure today to introduce our special guest, Ken Woodward, who is the curator of the museum. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
Now, I understand that your own family has long roots in Ramona. Tell us a little bit about your own family history first, and then we'll talk about the museum.
Yes, my family came out of Kellogg, Iowa. They came to Ramona in 1896, and the whole family, aunts, uncles, grandfather, grandmother, kids, girlfriends, the whole group. Two of them, they were actually farmers and dairymen out of Kellogg, Iowa.
What brought them to California, and how did they get here?
Well, they had lived in Iowa for many, many years, and they were just simply getting tired of the harsh winters and trying to take care of their farms and cattle, and so the whole family just packed up and came westward. That was my great-grandfather and all of his brothers and sisters.
Now, I understand that your family has quite the history here in Ramona. Can you give us a couple of highlights?
Yes. My family, they were farmers and dairymen, and later, my dad and his six brothers and sisters became very attached to Ramona. They grew up here. My dad's brother became a very famous historical archaeologist and historian. And my dad moved on in the 1930s and became chief of police in Oceanside, where he finished his years.
Now, let's hear about the museum.
The primary purpose of the museum was to commemorate the old-timers in Ramona, and they came here, they began coming here in about 1870.
Now, Ken, I understand that when your father was putting this whole marvelous museum together with all these different buildings, that he got some help from somebody who had a lot of experience in stage set design. Tell us about that.
Yes, he was very fortunate. Mr. Bill Cowan had moved to Ramona, and he had retired, and Bill Cowan was actually worked for Walt Disney Studios, and he built sets and built towns for Walt Disney Studios. So when my dad got ready to begin building some of the old barns and everything, he was very glad to help.
Yeah, this really does look like you've been plopped down and reincarnated in the middle of the Old West here with all these wonderful buildings. The centerpiece of it is the Theophile Verlaki House.
Yes.
And that was built, I understand, in 1886?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the house and how it came to be built.
Yes, Theophile Verlaki, he was a Basque from southern France. And at the time he left France in 1870 to come to the New World to make his living, the whole Verlaki family came in to New Orleans, and then he found his way in 1870 to San Diego. And he became very prominent in San Diego. He built several businesses there, became one of the largest wine producers in San Diego.
Wow, so Ramona's wine industry has roots that go all the way back to the 1800s. Very interesting. And today it's certainly a thriving business up here. What can people see if they go into the Verlaki house today?
Well, I always tell people that they need to understand that everything they see here on this property has all been donated, mainly because the museum is a nonprofit organization. And when they go into that beautiful home, and it is all adobe, and they will find it beautifully furnished with all donated furniture, with all kinds of books in the library, with all kinds of furnishings in throughout.
And there's also a doctor's office. Tell us about that.
And there's a really interesting doctor's office. One of the bedrooms been converted into a doctor's office. And that is, we have very old medical equipment that actually goes back to the 1800s that doctors have been donating to the museum. And it's really fascinating to see these old pieces of equipment.
There's also some very ornate furnishings. There's a fabulous antique grand piano in there, an old pump organ, a Victrola. And in one of the back bedrooms, I understand there's a bedroom set with an interesting history, too, very ornate.
Yes, the bedroom set is brought in to the museum in 1980, and this lady came in and said, I'd like to donate this beautiful bedroom set. It was built in 1840 back in Connecticut. But she said, you need to know who I am. She said, first of all, I'm part of the Yale family, the producers of the Yale Lock Company, and my great-great-grandfather in 1840 was the person who put together the Yale Lock Company.
Now, there's a lot more than just a vintage home on this property, however. You have amassed an amazing collection of some of the original buildings here in Ramona. Folks, if you come out here to the museum, the Guy B. Woodward Museum, you can see a vintage schoolhouse, a blacksmith shop, a barn, buggies, all kinds of interesting buildings, covered wagon, and also a jail. Now, I understand there's a really colorful history behind that jail. Tell us about it.
The jail was actually built in San Diego about 1890, and the jail was brought up here, 7 tons of iron, brought up to Ramona, and installed as the Ramona Jail. And then it, in the 1930s, it disappeared. And
so the jail was stolen?
No. The county of San Diego started using it for a dynamite storage, and it was found in a canyon and brought back to the museum.
Now, I understand that your mother used to have a job related to the jail.
Actually, that was my grandmother. And my grandmother, back in the early late 1800s, her job was to feed the prisoners, and she got 15 cents a day to bring them broth in.
And it has now been restored and brought back here to Ramona, and you can see it if you come out to visit the Guy B. Woodward Museum. Now, there's some other interesting buildings here. We're doing the interview actually sitting here in an old barn. What's the history of this?
Actually, it was one of my dad's ideas to bring in all of the old barns and all the old buildings that he could to the museum property. This barn was built in 1870. It was built by the Barnett family who came into Ramona from San Francisco area.
Looks like it's set up for meetings. Do you hold different kinds of meetings or events in here nowadays?
Yes. Every other month we have a potluck, and people are simply invited to bring something that they can share with everyone else. And we come in here and we have speakers on history and Ramona and things of this nature. It's really very good.
What fun. That's just an amazing resource to find. This place is a veritable treasure trove. As you walk through, you see antique dolls and vintage clothing and furnishings and tools. And there was a very interesting giant cook pot out there. Tell us about that.
The cook pot actually belonged to the Ortega family. And the Ortega family came to the valley in 1843, and they actually owned all 17,000 acres here in the valley.
So this was the family that received the land through the original Spanish land grant.
That's correct. And so the Ortegas proceeded to use the valley for farming all kinds of wheat and everything.
Now, of course, long before the original settlers came here, we had the Native Americans, the Kumeyaay people. I understand you have some Native American artifacts that people can see here as well.
Yes, the Kumeyaay Indians came to the valley 2,000 years ago, and we have some beautiful Indian artifacts, a whole display in the basement from that tribe.
Wow, I would love to take a look at that. And I understand, by the way, that the Kumeyaay now say they trace their history in the San Diego region back 10 to 12,000 years. Interesting, they've recently found some artifacts in some other areas that suggest they may have been here even a lot longer than that. There are also a lot of interesting vehicles here. I see some vintage buggies, you know, like horse-drawn buggies, and what looks like a Conestoga wagon or covered wagon out there. What can you tell us about those?
Yes, the one large wagon that we have, it seats about 12 people, and it used to take all the people that came into Lakeside into Julian. It took 12 hours for that wagon to take 12 people from Lakeside to Julian.
My goodness, how times have changed, and the kids think they have it rough now. Now, when your father was first getting started and putting this all together, there was another benefactor from San Diego who came along. He was the owner of San Diego Trust and Savings. Can you give us some details?
Yes, Mr. Thomas W. Sefton stopped by to see my dad one time and introduced himself, and my dad took him all the way through the museum and told him what he intended to do, and Mr. Sefton said, Guy, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to donate my mining equipment to the museum, which he did later on.
Yeah, and your father started this back in the 1980s or so, and then I understand that after he passed on and after Mr. Sefton passed on, the mantle kind of fell to you, and you came along and went downtown to retrieve all the mining equipment.
Yes, we were very fortunate because the Sefton family gave me a call one day, and they said, Ken, I understand that our father promised to give you all of the mining equipment from the Colorado, California, Nevada gold mines. And I said, yes, he did. And they said, well, come down and get it.
What else did you find when you went down there?
First of all, they directed me to a warehouse next on Marina Boulevard, right next to the train tracks. And so I went down, knocked on the door, took a look, and the train tracks actually came into this large barn area, and Mr. Sefton's own personal railroad car was there.
What those very wealthy travelers used to use to go cross-country in the olden days. Now, he also donated some other interesting things. I see a tall ship replica down here. What else?
Well, in addition to the ship replica, it's difficult to believe, but he also donated the keys to Mount Vernon, George Washington's house. And that has always been a very interesting display.
That's amazing. What else can people see that you would like people to know about the museum and the facilities here?
The way the museum is put together, I think, is the most important. Because all of a sudden, the centerpiece is the Verlac House, built in 1886. You have a full-size basement, which is filled with beautiful artifacts. Then we have adorned on, my dad had brought in all of these buildings from the 1870s, and he reconstructed them here on the property. We're sitting in an old barn that was built in 1870.
It's amazing. It's really one of those little-known treasures we have out here in East County that I think a lot of people don't know about and would love to visit if they could. Now, speaking of visiting, when is the museum open to the public?
The museum is open to the public as advertised Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 4 o'clock. However, the museum is also open Monday through Thursday.
I know it's run by a nonprofit organization. So if people have maybe old artifacts out there from the Ramona area in their basements or attics, who would they get in touch with if they have something they may wish to donate?
They would get in touch with our main office here on the grounds and describe what they would like to donate to see if we can use it and see if it fits in. That has been done. You'll be surprised at the number of artifacts that we have here that are local to Ramona.
Wonderful. So if you want to visit the museum, you can visit their website at www.woodwardmuseum.org. Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I'm going to give you the last word here. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about the Woodward Museum or the history of Ramona?
Well, I think it's really interesting. We have people from all over the world going through this museum. People coming in to visit California, they hear about the museum, they come up and they get a wonderful trip through the museum.
And it's located right on Main Street here in the heart of downtown Ramona today. Ken, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much, and it's been a delight talking to you.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.